Today we are looking at what might be the ultimate financial secret.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a document so exclusive and, so closely guarded and frankly, so fundamentally profound that the author apparently just, well, forgot to actually write it.
Which is just incredible.
Right. You heard me right. Today, for you, the listener, we are essentially analyzing a blank page. Welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me. I've been really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, me too. Because usually we take these massive stacks of sources, right? Like academic journals, dense market
Oh,
analyses.
yeah, those complex economic white papers.
Exactly. And our whole thing is extracting the vital signals from all that noise so you don't have to. But our mission today is highly, highly unusual because our source material is, well, practically non-existent.
Practically being the operative word there.
Right. It is a document that consists entirely of exactly 11 words.
And yet, and this is the crazy part, those 11 words managed to construct a psychological trap so sophisticated that an entire, multi-billion dollar financial advice industry is built on its exact
No,
architecture.
exactly. So I'm just going to read the entirety of our source text right now.
Go for it.
It is a single provocative heading. Here it is. Quote, excerpts from the secret rules of wealth building. The secret rules of wealth building, end
Yeah,
quote.
because that's it.
That's literally it. There's no paragraph one. There is no list of rules. It's just this echoing title on a completely blank page. So, okay, let's unpack this
Let's do it.
because we have a document here that explicitly promises hidden, exclusive financial knowledge, right?
Yeah.
And then it provides literally nothing beyond the promise itself. I mean, it's the ultimate empty vessel.
It is. And what's fascinating here is that even without the body text, the specific linguistic choices in that title act as a highly calibrated blueprint for human behavior.
Wait, how so? Just from a title.
Oh, absolutely. The author, and whether this was deliberate marketing genius or just sheer accidental brilliance, who knows? But they've deployed a sequence of words that immediately bypasses your prefrontal
It
cortex.
goes straight to the primitive brain.
Exactly. When you read those words, even knowing there is no text beneath them, your brain just starts firing on cylinders built for evolutionary survival.
Wow.
We are talking about the innate drive for security, the desperate need for status, and this deep biological imperative to understand resource distribution. Because words aren't just passive descriptors, right? They are active psychological triggers.
Right, they make us feel things before we even think about them.
Precisely. And this specific combination sets up a narrative journey that you, as the reader, go on without even realizing you've taken the first step.
It's almost like finding a locked safe in an entirely empty room.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Right, because the fact that the safe is locked immediately implies that whatever is inside must be incredibly valuable.
Even if it's completely empty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're captivated not by the contents, but by the implication of the lock itself. And, well, that's our mission today. We are going to deconstruct this lock.
It's a great mission.
We're going to figure out why these specific words, secret, rules, wealth, building, and excerpts, have such a hypnotic, almost paralyzing power over how we manage our money.
It's a very potent combination.
It really is. So let's start with the most, I don't know, glittering, seductive word in that entire string. The word secret.
Yeah, that is absolutely the engine driving the entire phrase. You
Rice.
notice it doesn't say the historical rules of wealth building or, the statistical rules.
No, it says the secret ones.
Exactly, the secret ones.
But why? Why does financial literature lean so incredibly heavily on this concept of secrecy? I mean, if you walk through a bookstore,
If you can find one,
right, true.
yeah.
Or if you just spend like 30 seconds scrolling through literally any social media feed, right? Every single financial influencer is promising to reveal a secret.
Every single one.
It's always a secret to beating the market, a secret to real estate, some secret tax loophole. What is the actual behavioral mechanism at play there? Because frankly, for me, it feels exhausting.
It is exhausting, but it's also incredibly effective. To understand the power of the secret, we really have to dig into the behavioral economics of how humans perceive and process inequality.
Okay, I'm with you.
So, when you look out at the modern world, you see a massive, undeniable disparity between the haves and the have-nots.
Oh, for sure. It's everywhere.
Right. Now, if you are someone striving to build wealth and you're looking up at the people who have already achieved it, your brain requires a narrative to rationalize that. massive gap.
Because we hate unresolved tension.
Exactly. Cognitive dissonance simply won't let you just accept the gap without a reason.
Right. Our brains are basically pattern-matching machines. We need to know why the gap exists in the first place.
Precisely. Now, if you conclude that the wealth gap is based purely on legacy capital, meaning, you know, they were born into money and you weren't.
Oh, that's incredibly demoralizing.
It really is. It leads directly to learned helplessness. And on the other hand, if you conclude the gap is based on pure random luck, that is deeply frustrating.
Because it means your own agency is totally irrelevant. Nothing you do matters.
Exactly. But, and here's the trick, if you convince yourself that the gap is based on a secret.
Oh, wow.
Right. Well, that changes the entire psychological landscape.
Because a secret implies a bridge.
Yes.
It implies that the gap isn't insurmountable. It's just, it's temporarily hidden from me.
Exactly. If wealth is a secret, then your current lack of wealth is not your fault.
Right. It doesn't mean I'm just inherently incapable.
Or undisciplined. Or irrevocably trapped in this rigid macroeconomic class system. It simply means you just haven't been let in on the information yet.
That is so comforting.
It is. It takes a massive, complex, systemic issue, structural economic inequality, and it reduces it to a simple problem of information asymmetry.
Information asymmetry. Man, that's a crucial concept here.
It really is the core of it.
It's like George Akerlof's Market for Lemons applied directly to personal finance. The idea that one party just has more or better information than the other.
Yes.
But in this case, the financial guru is essentially saying to you, look, the market isn't against you. The system isn't rigged. You're just driving blindfolded.
And I will sell you the ability to take the blindfold off.
Exactly.
Yep.
It totally absolves the listener of any guilt.
It is profoundly comforting because it whispers to the listener. It says, you are smart. You are capable. You work hard. You just didn't have the password to the vault.
And by buying this book.
Or subscribing to this newsletter.
Right. Or reading this so-called excerpt, you are finally getting the password.
It shifts the entire burden of financial struggle from a personal or systemic failure directly to a mere lack of access.
Wow. It's the monetization of hope, basically, disguised as proprietary data.
That's a perfect way to put it.
But, and I do want to push back on this pretty hard.
Please do.
Because the entire premise of a financial secret feels fundamentally outdated to me right now.
In what way?
Well, if we were sitting here in, say, 1985, sure. Access to stock charts, historical data, getting onto the trading floors, that was genuinely restricted.
Oh, absolutely. You needed a broker. You needed physical access.
Right. But you and I are sitting here today in an era of ubiquitous, almost aggressive information parity.
Yes. The internet changed everything.
Completely. If I want to know exactly how Warren Buffett structures his portfolio, I don't need to join a country club. I could literally just go read his SEC filings for free online.
True.
And if I want to understand the mathematical mechanics of compound interest, I don't need a secret society. I have thousands of peer-reviewed articles and free calculators right in my pocket on my phone.
Also true.
So are there actually any real secrets left in wealth building, or is secret just a vestigial marketing buzzword designed to make boring arithmetic sound sexy?
Well, you're hitting on the central paradox of the modern information age.
Am I right, though?
In terms of mechanics, yes, you are entirely correct. How to execute a trade, the historical return of the S&P 500, the exact tax implications of a Roth IRA, there are zero secrets there.
The raw data has been completely democratized.
Exactly. The raw data is free. However, it's a huge mistake to think that more information eliminates the feeling of secrecy.
Really?
In fact, the overabundance of information has created a brand new, highly lucrative kind of secret.
Wait, how does having access to too much information create a secret? That feels totally counterintuitive.
Think about it. It really comes down to cognitive load.
Okay, explain that.
When you are hit with a deafening roar of contradictory advice, I mean, one expert says you absolutely must buy crypto to survive inflation.
Oh, I see that every day.
Right. And another says real estate is the only safe haven. A third says day trading options is the path to freedom. And then a fourth tells you you need to hoard physical gold in your basement.
Exhausting. You just freeze up.
Exactly. The truth becomes obscured. But it's not obscured by darkness anymore.
It's obscured by a blinding, chaotic light.
Precisely. So the modern secret isn't hidden in data. The modern secret is the filter.
The filter.
Yes. The secret is knowing which three pieces of the 10 million pieces of available information actually matter to your specific life and in what precise order you should actually apply them.
Ah, I see. Okay. So it's the difference between having access to a massive library.
And knowing how to actually read the books.
Right. So the guru comes along and essentially says, look, I know you are drowning in all this data. I will cut through the noise for you.
Yes.
The secret isn't new information. It's my proprietary curation of the existing information.
Exactly. Curation is the new secrecy.
That makes so much sense.
And here's where it gets really clever. When mainstream, mathematically sound, but incredibly boring financial advice is repackaged and rebranded as a secret.
Like what? What kind of boring advice?
Like spending less than you earn and automatically investing the difference in broadly diversified index funds?
Right. The stuff that actually works, but nobody wants to talk about at parties.
Exactly. When that is rebranded as a secret, it actually serves a vital behavioral function. It takes basic, unglamorous principles and makes them feel exclusive.
It spices them up.
Because if I sit you down and say, the path to financial security is to save 15% of your income in a low-cost target date fund and literally never look at it for 40 years.
My brain completely shuts off.
Exactly. It sounds like dietary advice. It's the financial equivalent being told to eat plain broccoli.
Right. It completely lacks dopamine. Nobody is going to click on a video or buy a book called Eat Your Financial Broccoli and Wait 4 Decades.
Oh, no one.
We want the shortcut. We crave it.
But if I take that exact same mathematical reality, that exact same unglamorous behavior, and I frame it as the secret rule the elites use to compound capital while you sleep.
Oh, suddenly my auditory cortex lights up. I am fully engaged.
You're hooked.
The framing of secrecy adds a massive psychological premium to commonplace wisdom.
It manipulates our cognitive biases to make us actually want to adhere to a boring, disciplined routine.
That's exactly what it does. You know, it's like the psychological equivalent of a velvet rope.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Like if you put a velvet rope outside a completely empty, mediocre nightclub.
People will line up.
People will literally line up around the block just to get past the rope. Because the rope itself implies value, regardless of what's actually happening on the dance floor.
That is a perfect encapsulation. The velvet rope triggers our in-group, out-group biases.
We desperately want to be on the inside of the rope.
Because evolutionary biology tells us that the in-group survives and the out-group starves. So by calling it a secret, the author is erecting a velvet rope.
Okay, but, and this is me, but if these secrets are ultimately just rigid, unforgiving frameworks.
Which they usually are.
Right. What our text explicitly calls rules. How is a normal person supposed to survive the inevitable financial mistakes they're going to make?
That's the danger.
Because the title doesn't just say the secret wealth building. It introduces a very specific structural enforcement mechanism. It says the secret rules. And I really want to shift our focus there now because the word rules carries a heavy, almost dictatorial psychological weight.
Oh, the semantic weight of the word rules cannot be overstated here. I mean, consider the alternative vocabulary the author could have used.
They could have used anything.
Right. They could have written the secret guidelines or the secret tips or the secret strategies.
But those feel very different.
Completely different. A tip is just a helpful suggestion, right? You take it or leave it based on your mood.
Yeah.
A strategy implies a fluid plan. It adapts to the enemy or the market. And a guideline is just a soft boundary to keep you generally facing true north.
But a rule?
A rule implies a strict, binary, systematic, and entirely unforgiving framework.
A rule implies immediate consequences if broken. It implies a referee who is going to blow the whistle and penalize you.
Yes. And if we connect this to the bigger picture of how humans attempt to understand the economy, rules suggest a universe of absolute Newtonian cause and effect.
Meaning what? Yeah. Exactly.
It taps into a very specific kind of financial determinism. The implication is every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. If you rigidly follow the rules, wealth is the guaranteed mathematical output. It is inevitable. But conversely, if you break the rules, you will inevitably face a financial penalty.
Man, that removes all the nuance. And frankly, it just removes the reality of the world we actually live in.
It absolutely does.
Because if you're listening to this right now and you're thinking, okay, that's great in theory, but my rent just spiked 20% this year.
Right.
And inflation completely ate my supposed wage increase. And I can't mathematically follow the quote-unquote 30% of income on housing rule without, you know, literally starving.
Which is the reality for so many people right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. You are experiencing exactly why rigid financial dogma is so dangerous. So I have to ask, Does this rigid framework of rules actually provide comfort, or does it just manufacture a brand new kind of anxiety for anyone who isn't living in a perfect spreadsheet?
It's fascinating. It actually does both sequentially.
Sequentially.
Yes. Initially, it provides profound comfort because we crave order in chaos. When the macroeconomic environment feels utterly chaotic, you know, when you have banks collapsing, supply chains breaking down, algorithmic trading causing flash crashes.
The individual feels entirely powerless.
Completely. And in that environment of high uncertainty, an external set of rigid personal financial rules acts as an anchor.
It gives you something to hold on to.
Exactly. It creates what psychologists call an internal locus of control.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Right. It allows you to tell yourself, well, the global economy might be burning to the ground, but as long as I follow rule number three and keep my emergency fund in a high yield savings account, I personally will survive.
Right. It's an anxiety reduction mechanism. It reduces decision fatigue, too.
Oh, massively. You don't have to evaluate every single financial decision from scratch every single day.
Like, should I buy this coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Should I take this vacation?
Should I lease this car? You don't have to calculate the opportunity cost in real time. You just consult the rule book. If the rule says no, the decision is made.
It preserves willpower.
Exactly. It preserves cognitive energy.
But the dark side of that, and this is what really bothers me about the absolute nature of rules, is what happens when reality literally forces you to break one.
And it always does eventually.
Always. Let's look at the classic rules of personal finance. Never carry a credit card balance. Save 6 months of living expenses. Invest 20% of your gross income.
Classic advice.
Right. But if personal finance is presented as a set of inflexible binary rules and you suffer a massive medical emergency,
which you can't control,
and it wipes out your savings and forces you into debt, you haven't just suffered a stroke of bad luck. Under a rules-based framework, you failed.
Yeah.
You have committed a transgression. Doesn't that just breed an intense sense of shame?
It breeds toxic shame.
Toxic shame.
That is the inherent danger of dogmatic financial rules. They completely ignore systemic factors, black swan events, and tail risks.
Because life is messy.
Extremely messy. By insisting that wealth is the guaranteed result of following the rules, the inverse must also be true psychologically.
Right. Poverty, or even just temporary financial struggle, must be the direct result of breaking them.
Yes. It places the entire burden of complex economic realities squarely on the shoulders of individual moral character.
It pathologizes bad luck.
It really does. And from a behavioral standpoint, shame is incredibly paralyzing.
People just shut down.
Completely. When someone feels they have broken the rules and failed the system, they don't usually double down on good behavior. They often experience what we call the what the hell effect.
The what the hell effect.
I think, well, my budget is already ruined this month because my car broke down, so what the hell? I might as well put this new TV on the credit card, too.
Oh, wow. I've definitely felt that before.
We all have. Rigid rules are brittle. When they bend, they don't flex. They shatter completely.
You know, I love the analogy of a GPS versus a compass here.
Oh, let's hear it.
So a rigid rule is like following a GPS turn by turn. It's incredibly easy. It requires basically no thought. And it works perfectly like 95% of the time.
Right. Turn left in 500 feet.
Exactly. But if the road is closed due to a flood and the GPS keeps screaming at you to turn left into the river, you are stuck.
Because you don't actually know where you are.
Right. You have no underlying understanding of your geography. But a financial principle, rather than a rule, is like a compass.
See where you're going with this.
It doesn't tell you exactly when to turn, but it always tells you where true north is. You have to actually do the work to navigate the obstacles, but you definitely won't drive into a lake.
That is a phenomenal distinction. The most sophisticated financial minds eventually and necessarily graduate from rules to principles.
Because rules are too limiting.
Yes. A rule is dogmatic. It says, never, ever carry debt.
Which isn't always practical.
Right. But a principle is adaptable. A principle says, understand the cost of capital, understand your own risk tolerance, and utilize leverage only when the probabilistic expected return significantly outpaces the interest rate, adjusting for downside risk.
Yeah, but try putting that principle on a TikTok video.
Exactly.
You can't.
It just doesn't work.
A rule fits on a bumper sticker. A principle requires a lecture on probability. And this is exactly why the mass market demands rules. But there is a fascinating irony hidden here when we look at the extreme end of the wealth spectrum.
Ooh, let's go there. Because If we look at the people who have generated the most staggering, world-altering amounts of wealth in history.
The outliers.
Right, the industrial titans of the 19th century, the tech billionaires of the 21st century, the disruptors who build these massive global empires, did they do it by rigidly following the secret rules of wealth building? Or is massive generational wealth creation inherently tied to breaking the rules of the existing system? History shows us pretty clearly that true outlier wealth generation almost always involves a profound transgression of established norms.
They break the rules.
They don't just break them. They look at the rules and realize they are entirely artificial.
Wow.
It involves regulatory arbitrage. It involves creating entirely new markets where rules haven't even been legislated yet.
Because the technology outpaces the law.
Exactly. And it involves fundamentally challenging the accepted physical or economic constraints of their era. The people at the very top of the wealth distribution didn't get there by perfectly executing the 50-30-20 budget rule.
No, definitely not.
They got there by rewriting the underlying code of the economy.
So they aren't reading the excerpts, they're writing the text.
That's exactly it. So the great irony of a book titled The Secret Rules of Wealth Building is that it is selling a paradigm that the truly wealthy actively abandoned.
That is wild.
However, and this is a crucial caveat for you, the listener.
Yeah, let's ground this.
We have to distinguish between becoming a billionaire disruptor and simply achieving personal financial independence.
Right, because most of us just want to pay off the mortgage and retire comfortably.
Exactly. For the vast majority of people whose goal is autonomy, security, and a comfortable retirement, foundational rules are incredibly effective.
They keep us on the road.
They do. The discipline of a structured path protects us from our own worst behavioral impulses.
Like our tendency to panic sell when the market drops.
Or our tendency to succumb to lifestyle creep every time we get a raise. We just have to maintain the cognitive flexibility to remember that the rule is a human construct.
It's a tool, not a law of physics.
Perfectly said. It's a heuristic tool we are choosing to use.
Okay, so we've deconstructed the secret. The illusion of information asymmetry that absolves us of guilt.
Right.
And we've tackled the rules, the cognitive heuristic that provides comfort but risks brittle failure. Now, we really have to look at the ultimate destination these secret rules claim to lead to. Because the phrase in our 11-word document isn't getting rich.
No, it's not.
It is specifically, deliberately, wealth building.
Which is a massive distinction.
And I want to dig deeply into this because the choice of the word building completely alters the timeline and really the emotional requirement of the promise.
The linguistic shift from rich to wealth building is profound.
How so?
It moves us out of the realm of magic and lottery tickets, and it grounds us in the gritty reality of physics and time.
It changes the temporal dimension entirely.
It does.
Let's break down the mechanics of that. Getting rich versus wealth building. When you observe human behavior around money, what is the fundamental difference in how our brains process those two specific concepts?
Well, getting rich is processed by the brain as an event.
An event.
Yes. It implies a sudden, radical state change. You win the lottery, or the speculative altcoin you bought moons, your startup gets acquired by a tech giant, or maybe you inherit a sudden windfall.
Right. Tuesday, you are not rich. Wednesday, lightning strikes and you are rich.
Exactly. It's a binary flip.
It's an instant dopamine hit. It requires absolutely no sustained effort, just a singular moment of extreme luck or extreme leverage.
Precisely. And because it's an event, it requires zero behavioral adaptation.
You don't have to change who you are.
Right. But building is an active, ongoing participle.
It's a verb.
Yes. It is a slow, methodical process. It implies construction, patience, a solid foundation, and compounding effort over really long stretches of time.
You do not event a skyscraper into existence.
You construct it.
You construct it. So by pairing wealth with building, the title anchors this potentially flighty, magical concept of the secret rule back down into grueling, long-term reality.
It fundamentally demands delayed gratification.
And from everything I've read in behavioral economics, human beings are spectacularly bad at delayed gratification.
Oh, we are uniquely terrible at it.
We suffer from hyperbolic discounting.
Well, right? We do.
That's the idea, that we would much rather have a small reward right now than a significantly larger reward in the future.
Hyperbolic discounting is the absolute enemy of wealth building.
Why is it so hardwired into us, though?
Because our brains evolved in an environment of immediate physical scarcity. If our ancestors found a caloric source, say a bushful of berries out on the savannah,
you couldn't just leave them there.
No, the survival mandate was to consume those calories immediately. You couldn't save the berries for retirement.
Right, they would rot, or a predator would steal them.
Exactly. Our neurology is hardwired for immediate consumption. We literally discount the value of future rewards because historically, the future is incredibly uncertain.
So when we talk about wealth building, we are actively fighting hundreds of thousands of years of evolutionary programming.
We are fighting our own biology.
That's incredible.
To build wealth, you have to bridge an immense psychological gap between your current self and your future self.
Okay, unpack that a little bit. Current self versus future self.
Sure. When you take money out of your paycheck and put it into an index fund that you cannot touch for 30 years.
It hurts.
Right. Your current self feels the pain of deprivation. You can't use that money to buy a nicer car or take a better vacation right now.
And what about the future self?
Your future self, the one who actually gets the benefit, feels like a stranger to your brain. It requires profound emotional regulation to continually prioritize a total stranger over your current immediate desires.
I think the architectural analogy of building is perfectly apt here.
It maps perfectly.
Because you don't build a skyscraper overnight.
Mm.
And you certainly don't start by decorating the penthouse.
No, you'd collapse.
You have to pour the concrete foundation first. You have to dig a massive, ugly hole in the ground before you can even begin to go up.
You have to do soil testing. You have to erect scaffolding. You have to consult blueprints.
And the reality of building a physical structure is that it is often very boring, incredibly repetitive work, laying brick after brick, day after day.
And crucially, and this is where people give up, when you are pouring a foundation, you cannot live in the house yet.
Oh, that's such a good point.
You are expending massive amounts of energy, time, and resources without any immediate shelter or utility.
You're just staring at a slab of concrete.
That is the exact psychological posture required for the first decade of investing.
Wow.
You are putting money away today into a structural foundation that you will not inhabit for decades.
And what I find genuinely fascinating is how viewing your finances as an ongoing construction project, how that fundamentally changes how you process negative external shocks.
Yes.
Because if your mental model is just getting rich,
right,
and you lose 20% of your portfolio in a market correction,
which happens regularly,
your brain registers that as an absolute existential failure. The lightning didn't strike. The lottery ticket was a dud. You are a loser.
You want to quit.
But if your mental model is firmly rooted in wealth building, how does a bear market or a financial setback fit into that framework?
Under the building paradigm, a setback is no longer a failure of your identity or your ultimate goal.
What is it then?
It is simply a delay in the construction process. It is bad weather on the job site.
Oh, I love that. Bad weather on the job site.
Think about it. If you are building a house and it rains torrentially for a week straight,
you don't declare the project a failure, bulldoze the foundation, and walk away forever.
Of course not. You understand that weather is an external variable totally outside your control. You tarp off the exposed areas, you protect the raw materials, you wait out the storm, and the absolute moment the sun comes out, you get back to laying bricks.
The framework of building creates profound emotional resilience.
It does. It accepts mathematically that external forces, recessions, inflation, job loss, will occasionally disrupt the timeline. But it maintains the core belief that the overarching architecture is sound.
That makes building the most honest, unvarnished word in the entire provided text.
It really is.
Because the word secret is highly manipulative marketing.
Hmm.
The word rules is an overly rigid, potentially toxic heuristic.
Mm-hmm.
But building tells the absolute uncomfortable truth about what financial security actually requires.
It requires sweat equity.
And the passage of time.
It also implies a concept we rarely discuss in personal finance.
Maintenance.
Maintenance.
Yes. A well-built financial life, exactly like a well-built physical house, requires ongoing, deliberate maintenance.
Oh, of course.
It has load-bearing walls that cannot be compromised. It requires emergency exits, which is your liquidity in case of fire. It needs insulation against the bitter winters of economic downturns.
Right.
When the cultural conversation revolves around getting rich, the narrative always stops at the exact moment the money is acquired.
It's the fairy tale ending. And they lived wealthy ever after.
Exactly. But anyone who has ever owned a physical home knows that the building doesn't magically stop when you unpack your boxes.
No, things break immediately. You have to replace the roof in 20 years. You have to fix the plumbing when it leaks. Wealth building is a lifelong active stewardship of resources.
You know, it's the fundamental difference between capturing a wild animal and actually domesticating it, breeding it, and keeping it alive.
That's a great metaphor.
Experiencing a windfall, like getting a massive bonus, an inheritance, winning the lottery, is like capturing a wild animal.
You have the asset.
Exactly. You have the asset. But if you have spent zero time building the architecture, if you don't know how to build a pen, how to formulate its diet, how to treat its illnesses, that animal is either going to escape immediately or it is going to die.
And that's exactly why we see the tragic statistics of lottery winners or professional athletes going completely bankrupt within 5 years of acquiring millions.
It happens so often.
They experience the distinct event of getting rich, but they possess zero internal architecture for wealth building.
Which brings us to the profound, almost comical tension fighting within the title itself.
The irony is rich.
Right. The first half of the phrase, "The Secret Rules," promises a magical shortcut, a hack, an easy key to unlock the vault.
And the second half of the phrase, "wealth building," demands long-term, arduous, boring labor.
The title is essentially at war with itself.
It perfectly mirrors the internal psychological conflict of the average investor. We desperately want the process to be quick and easy, but we know deep down in our bones that it will be slow and hard.
Okay, we have successfully extracted a staggering amount of behavioral psychology, economic theory, and human nature from just the vocabulary of this title.
It's a dense 11 words.
It really is. We've explored the information asymmetry of exclusivity, the cognitive load reduction of rigid frameworks, and the delayed gratification required for actual construction.
But
we have reached the moment of truth. We can't avoid it any longer.
We have to address the elephant in the room.
A massive, glaring elephant.
Yeah.
We have to address the structural paradox of the source document itself.
The fact that, beyond the title, the document is an absolute void.
Right. The text literally begins with the words "excerpts from," and then concludes by merely repeating the title, "The Secret Rules of Wealth Building." The Secret Rules of Wealth Building.
There are no excerpts.
There are no excerpts. There are no rules listed. There is zero content, zero advice, zero numbers.
It is an ornate, beautifully carved frame with absolutely no painting inside it.
So what do we do with that?
Well, this is where we move from behavioral economics directly into the realm of human projection.
Okay, human projection.
This raises an incredibly important question about how we consume information, especially in the highly emotionally charged space of self-improvement and personal finance.
Right.
The document boldly announces itself as a fragment of a larger, incredibly valuable whole in excerpt, but it delivers an empty vessel. Why is an empty vessel in the right context sometimes far more powerful and persuasive than a full one?
Because nature abhors a vacuum.
Yes.
And the human mind really, truly abhors a vacuum. We just cannot tolerate missing information.
Exactly. When human beings are presented with an empty framework that has an enticing, authoritative title, we do not just passively stare at the blank space and accept the emptiness.
No, we fill it in.
We actively, aggressively fill it in. We project our own assumptions, our deepest insecurities, our unique anxieties, and our highest hopes directly onto that blank canvas.
It's almost psychological.
Oh, it is. Psychologists refer to a version of this as the Barnum effect. Or the Forer effect.
What's that?
It's the phenomenon where individuals believe that generic personality descriptions apply specifically to them. Think of astrology or horoscopes.
Oh, right. Like reading a horoscope and thinking, wow, that is exactly me today.
Exactly.
Yep.
But here, the effect is magnified because the description isn't just generic, it's completely absent.
Wow. Here's where it gets really interesting to me.
Yeah.
If I hand you a 400-page book of highly complex tax strategies and real estate depreciation schedules. You might read it. You might fundamentally disagree with parts of it. You might find the writing style incredibly boring. Or you might realize it mathematically doesn't even apply to your specific tax bracket.
Right, because there's substance there to evaluate.
Exactly. The text itself creates a limitation. The presence of actual information gives you a surface area to attack and critique.
I see what you mean.
But if I hand you a completely blank document, titled "The Secret Rules of Wealth Building," it is suddenly magically flawless.
Because the rules you subconsciously imagine in your own head to fill that void are perfectly, seamlessly tailored to your exact life.
Exactly. It becomes the ultimate Rorschach test for financial anxiety.
That is a brilliant way to phrase it.
Right, because if you are a listener who struggles deeply with impulsive spending and you constantly feel guilty about your credit card bill,
you'll project that.
You will look at that blank space and subconsciously assume the secret rule must be about extreme monastic frugality and ironclad budget discipline.
And conversely, if you are someone who works 80 brutal hours a week but can't seem to outpace inflation, you look at the exact same blank space and assume the secret must be about generating passive income, leveraging assets, and escaping the rat race.
The empty text is nothing more than a mirror,
reflecting the reader's own internal perceived deficiencies.
That is profound. We supply the missing pieces based entirely on what we feel we personally lack.
Yes.
If you feel chaotic, the secret rule must be order. If you feel trapped by order, the secret rule must be risk.
It's a closed loop.
It's almost like a brilliant, unintentional piece of performance art. The author didn't need to actually write the excerpts or provide the data.
No, because by simply providing the authoritative title and the blank space, they forced the reader to generate the exact wisdom they needed themselves.
In many ways, by stripping away all specific advice, all the contradictory noise, all the complex charts, and all the dogmatic rules of the guru industry.
This 11-word document forces a direct confrontation with the reader's own agency.
When there is no text to follow, there is no one left to blame.
Boom. Exactly.
It's the financial equivalent of a Zen koan.
Yes.
Like, what is the sound of one hand clapping becomes, what are the secret rules of wealth building when the pages are completely blank?
And perhaps the genuine answer to that koan, the real actual insight to be gleaned from this deeply weird source material, is that the ultimate secret rule of wealth building is exactly what the document provided.
Which is?
Nothing.
Wait. Explain the mechanism there. How can the absolute secret to wealth be nothing? That sounds like nihilism.
It's not nihilism. It's absolute accountability.
Okay.
The secret might simply be that there is no secret.
Oh.
There is no magical text out there that you haven't read yet that is going to suddenly fix your balance sheet.
There's no hidden shortcut.
No proprietary algorithm. No guru's masterclass that is going to save you from doing the work. There is only the cold mathematical reality of your income, your expenses, your time horizon, your risk tolerance, and your daily discipline.
The deepest secret in personal finance is that the cavalry isn't coming.
The cavalry isn't coming. The guru doesn't have the answer for your specific life. You, and you alone, are entirely responsible for the architecture of your own financial reality.
Wow.
The literal absence of text is the most profound, empowering lesson this document could possibly impart.
That is wild and incredibly true.
It really is.
By giving us nothing, the document gives us total agency. It hands the locus of control directly back to you, the listener.
The ultimate financial guru move would literally be to sell a beautifully bound, incredibly expensive leather book of completely blank pages titled The Secret Rules of Wealth Building.
I would buy that.
Right. You open it, desperate for the answers, looking for the velvet rope, and the only thing you find is empty space for you to write your own financial destiny.
It forces you to stop being a passive, anxious consumer of generic advice.
And requires you to become the active, deliberate builder of your own wealth.
It demands that you shift your focus from the external, constantly searching for the guru, timing the market, hunting for the secrets to the internal.
You cannot read your way to wealth if you are just endlessly consuming the excerpts of other people's rules.
Right. At some point, the consumption of advice has to stop and the actual execution of building has to start.
The consumption has to stop and the execution has to start.
I love the reality of that. You know, we started this deep dive looking at what appeared to be just a clerical error.
A literal blank page.
We looked at an 11-word document that seemed like a mistake, a typo, a missing file on a server somewhere. But when you really examine the chaotic, noisy, often predatory landscape of personal finance,
this empty document might be the clearest, most honest signal we've ever seen.
It perfectly, ironically encapsulates the entire industry.
It does. It highlights the glittering, manipulative promise of the secret. It shows us the authoritarian, brittle comfort of the rules.
It reminds us of the undeniable, gritty reality of the building.
And ultimately, it reveals the sheer emptiness of relying on excerpts instead of doing the internal work yourself.
We took a massive journey today, based on a tiny fragment of text.
We really did.
From the behavioral economics of exclusivity and the allure of the velvet rope, to the psychological dangers of rigid heuristics, and all the way to the architectural realities of constructing a financial life that can actually withstand a macroeconomic storm.
It's all in the framing.
We've seen how the framing of financial advice, the words used to sell the concept, is often far more important to understand than the advice itself.
And understanding that framing is a crucial, vital defense mechanism for you, the listener.
Exactly.
The next time you are scrolling and you see an advertisement for a secret rule, a hidden trick, or an exclusive strategy, your brain won't immediately fall for the trap.
You will recognize the psychological levers being pulled.
You will understand the information asymmetry they are trying to exploit.
You'll know that they are selling you the feeling of relief, the illusion of a shortcut, rather than the reality of the blueprint.
You can consume financial media with a critical eye without being consumed by it.
Exactly. You are no longer the fish biting the shiny empty hook.
Yeah.
You see the hook for what it actually is.
It's true freedom.
So we're going to leave you with a final assignment today.
A little homework.
Just a little bit. Since the original author of our highly unusual source text left the excerpts entirely blank, it is literally up to you to fill them in.
We want you to think about your own financial journey up to this point.
Think about the mistakes you've made, the unexpected wins you've had, the slow, boring grind of coring the foundation, and the storms you've weathered.
Based solely on the financial lessons you have learned the hard way in your own specific, unique life.
What is your personal rule number one?